Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 685, September 2023.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. We conclude this little trilogy of the September, it might not be September anymore, September of Superman with the sequel to Superman 2. I know you're thinking Superman 3, but no, because Superman Returns came out in 2006 and it said, we're going to pretend that there were two Superman movies and then we made our own Superman movie after that. So this is the Superman Returns, an homage and sequel to Superman 1 and 2, starring Brandon Routh as Superman. And joining me to talk about this third Superman movie, because we're just going to go with it, right? We're going to go with it, people, it's an unexpectedly large group of people to talk about a movie from 2006. Cicero Holmes is here. Cicero, thank you for being here. I hope you're wearing a cape.
Woo, Jack, that's a bad outfit.
That was two episodes ago, but reference acknowledged. David J. Lohr is here. Hi, David.
I know it's been a while. Thank you for giving me my job back. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's because Jerry died.
Yeah, well, you know.
Shelley Brisbin is here. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, Jason. My password is Superman.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good security. highest of securities. Moises Chuyon is here. Hello.
Jason, as a seasoned journalist, I think I'm finally figuring out that these things that very obviously look like latitude and longitude coordinates mm-hmm. are coordinates.
I think they're coordinates. I think you're right. And Erica Ensign. Hello.
Hello. I am here for Brandon Routh and Brandon Routh only. Although he should not have blue eyes. That is the one thing I have to say. That's weird.
Mm. Interesting. So we watched the first two Superman movies and we discovered that there were things about them that we didn't like and that maybe our memory was tricking us all along. And then in the midst of recording the Superman 2 episode, I mentioned Superman Returns and Erica. I had put it on the schedule and then I had taken it off the schedule. And I was like, are we going to do 3 weeks about Superman? Are we going to do 2 weeks about Superman? And when I mentioned Superman Returns to Erica and described what it was, Erica was like, oh, that's interesting. We should do that. And so we're here. So thanks, Erica. I vaguely remember.
I'm here for Brandon Routh. You may have said more things than that, but I totally tuned out after his name. So.
All right. Well, that was the first. I'm sure I led with that. I remember watching this movie in 2006, and I think at least once since, and having fairly positive feelings about it. So again, we've learned with previous Superman movies, don't trust your feelings, don't trust your memories. You got to watch it because you never know. I'm also going to say up front that two of the people involved in making this movie are essentially unemployable in Hollywood because they're alleged to have done horrible things. We're not going to go into the horrible things, but just to say, yes, I know Bryan Singer directed it. And yes, Kevin Spacey is in it as Lex Luthor. And if that bothers you, then don't watch it because they're, you know, Kevin and Spacey's all over it, and Bryan Singer made it. So there.
On the plus side, he is an eminently hissable villain.
He is. Meh. He is. It's true. So if you would like to hiss at Kevin Spacey, you may do so. But anyway, just to acknowledge that those guys basically won't work again, probably for a while, if not forever. Anyway, I mean, who knows this world? But anyway, they're just acknowledging very bad things alleged to have been done by them and various legal proceedings, some of which were resolved and some of which were not. But like, there it is, just putting a flag up for that. So I wanted to say, having watched these movies all in short succession, how delighted I was by many things in this movie, really, that are clearly homages to the first two movies. But I must begin with the credits, because the credits pay homage to the first two movies while being vastly more interesting and dynamic than those credit sequences were.
Oh, God, yes.
Hooray. I mean, CGI planets and stuff and stars that you can see and all that. And they're like, they added another color for the actors so that they weren't just all the same color. It's all a little bit faster. There's some pans. There's one pan where they have to pan around like a planet to another planet. And one of the actors' names, I think it might be Kate Bosworth, is like, or maybe it's Parker Posey, is coming toward the camera as it's panning. And you can see like their name has to kind of like, like do a little like a change in trajectory in order to like, hey camera, it's time for me now, you stay with me now. That made me laugh, but I liked that it was an homage, but also modern, 2006 modern, and less boring
considering how fast it's moving. I was surprised by the rest of the movie. But
that yes, well, we'll get there. So one of the things the memory does not recall later is the pacing. Although sometimes it does in strange ways that you remember still the things that
still felt way faster than the first two. My God.
I'm just saying my memory of this movie is sort of like that there's a boat involved, that like that's my memory. It's like they could have spent 2 hours on the boat. And to be fair, once you get on the boat, it seems like it takes 2 hours. But
it does.
We will get there. We begin with an old woman dying, but not before. Well, actually, she's in the midst of signing over everything she owns to Lex Luthor.
But before that, we have a title card explaining that there's continuity that happened.
Oh, that's right.
This.
You're right.
Right.
Right. Superman got lost on the way to his home planet.
Whoops. Whoops. I took too many left turns. Oopsie.
No, you're right.
Superman may have X-ray vision, but his GPS kind of sucks.
I find it fascinating that they have the title card, because it's explained later in dialogue why Superman left and when. And so having both that, because he says later, yes, when the astronomers thought they found the ruins of Krypton, I had to go see for myself. And yet the title card is like, Superman left because astronomers might have found Krypton and he had to see it for himself. It's like, yeah, movie.
But to be fair, it took him a really long time for him to come back and say that. I'm not saying they should have done it that way, but it's not as if it was done like 2 minutes later. It's
no,
like, just in case you didn't read the title card.
It seemed unnecessary to do both to me, but
I agree. I'm just saying.
There were a lot of things in this film, though, that seemed unnecessary. I kind of agree with Shelley. Like, it was way later in the movie and it would have been really confusing.
He talks to his mom about it right up front, though. So if they would have just made that dialogue a little bit more clear as to why he had gone looking for it and when and how long he had been away, then they could have done away with the title card. But like, he does touch on it right away. It's just not quite enough as much as later.
Or the second set of dialogue that is literally him reading the same text that's in the title card, which is just...
See, that's my objection to it, that it is so late. If it had been earlier on, they wouldn't need a touch. Well, just what Erica said, that because I'm wondering that. I'm wondering, okay, where are we? Why has he been gone? Obviously, his being gone has been noticed by other people. A lot of stuff has happened.
Did the writers of this movie misremember the end of Superman 2 and think that he left Earth to go back to his home planet? Because the premise feels like that, but that's not it. They had to sort of say, oh, imagine that then right after Superman 2, he left.
Well, they misremembered how Krypton was destroyed.
Right.
Because in the original movies, it just exploded. Well, here, it's
not,
this,
a, not
the,
only
the,
did
the
it
sun
explode, it was gone for thousands of years.
Thousands of years. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to be fair, the previous movie that this is supposed to be a sequel to happened a quarter century before this movie
indeed.
Did.
Indeed.
And
it is. Look, the meteorite that Lex steals, because boy, that guy loves stealing meteorites, people, is from 1978, which is a little hat tip to the original. And yeah, the timeline, what is it? I don't know how it works. It doesn't matter. It's not really the point. But the idea here is that Clark after the events of Superman 2, basically, or Superman, you can think of him either way if you like, decided to go back and he was shaken by the idea that they had found where Krypton was, and so he went there to see for himself. I have questions about like his power and the yellow sun, and then he leaves the solar system, and does he not have his power anymore? I guess he does, or he would have died. I don't know, but I kind of like
that. He had a giant rock.
He was in the spaceship.
He did have a rock.
Well, he comes back in the giant ship, but where did he get the giant ship?
Well, the giant ship had, it had sun rays in it.
That's how he got there. Well, you guys, he built it on Earth. That's how he got there and how he got back.
Using the power of crystal technology.
Exactly.
It's very powerful.
Okay. It looked exactly like the crystal stuff.
Considering the amount of retelling of exposition that this movie does, they didn't go over any of that.
I know.
Seems like maybe a missed opportunity, but I'll bring this up again later. I just want to bring it up now. Did he pack 5 years worth of lunches? I just want to know what his plan was. He just doesn't eat.
He doesn't need human nutrition at all. He doesn't need food. No, just the the yellow sun.
He traveled for 12 years with his dad in the first movie. I have no problem with this.
He survives on the power of exposition.
He does. And his cape is edible, just in case.
Or deep sleep.
It's fruit leather.
Yeah. It's funny that we've stopped to talk about this, because I feel like this movie is at its best when you don't worry about it.
Right. Yes.
So,
well, there's so many things are repeated in this movie. They give you something like even the Arthur C. Clarke quote gets repeated twice by two different people. It's like, stop it.
Yeah. There's a lot. Should I walk through the movie, or should we take it apart in pieces? We could do it either way. I don't really care.
I'm not taking it apart
at all.
Oh,
no, I just mean analyzing the bits of, because there's various plot bits. And yeah. I liked
it
too.
Walking versus running.
I'm going to go and say from the perspective of 2023, this is a way better superhero movie than Superman 1 and 2.
Okay. I was going to say, this is, you know, because I remember seeing Superman 2 in the theater, and all these years it's been like, oh, well, Superman 2, that was a terrific film. And then watching it the other week and going, oh, that's not really that good.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And this,
I thought it was
ignored it at the time. And then because I heard some of the plot points and I'm thinking, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know. And so this is literally the first time I've seen it. And I think this might be the best of the Superman films, with some caveats, but...
Yeah, I would go so far as to say, it feels to me like what I remember the other Superman movies being.
Yes!
Well said.
Wow. That's a hell of a trick.
Wow.
I mean, not by no means a perfect movie, by no means.
No.
But,
no.
Well, since we're on qualitative things, here's the thing. People constantly say, finally, a good Superman movie. They don't say great. They don't ever say great. It's always good. And I'm not saying that this is a terrible, horrible, irredeemable movie with, you know, nothing good or validating about it. But it's not great. And it's an unfortunate indictment of one of the cleanest, simplest archetypal characters that DC has, that they have just not really completely hit it out of the park making a Superman movie in all senses, where the best version of it that they have really is this one, by a long shot. Despite what the swamp gas did to me toward the beginning of the Man of Steel episode,
to live in
infamy.
I would argue the first half of Man of Steel is that moment where I'm like, oh, this is really interesting, and then
finally,
it lost me completely.
Right. They got it.
But here, I'm not sure I'm going to walk through the plot as well, as because we got a lot of big ideas, especially having watched these three in succession. I don't need to walk through the plot. We'll get to the bits that are interesting as we go. But a thesis, I'm not sure I entirely buy this, but I want to throw it out there, which is one of the things that this movie, when I mentioned that it plays like how I remember the first two movies playing, I think part of that is it acknowledges what the other two movies, especially the first movie, don't. They're busy doing it and not quite being it yet, which is the connection between Lois and Superman and Margot Kidder and Christopher Reeve, and that chemistry that leads to some magical scenes in movies that are otherwise, you know, not that great, but the magic is what we remember. And I think that in making this movie, they said, look, what do we remember about those movies that we love? Let's do that again. A little bit like, and please, we don't have to go into it too much, but I'll say a little bit like, say, J.J. Abrams in The Force Awakens, where it's sort of like, it's not quite a remake, because it's not, but it's playing some of the hits, and there's something to be said from that, especially when you take the hits from movies that were kind of broken and try to put them in another movie. And so I found it funny that what this movie does that I think is very successful is it's trying to lean on the connection between Clark and Lois, Superman and Lois, but it's also trying to find a good way to tell a story about Superman. And their answer here is Superman works when he's solving problems and when he has interpersonal issues, because he has all the powers, right? So the issues are either application of his powers. How do I fix this? It's not just I am strong. It's like, how do I fix it? Or how do I fix the human heart? Those are the two things that he has to deal with. And this movie has a lot of that. And I think that's one of the reasons that I like it, is because it seems to have like a better idea of what to do with that. And is also trading on our memories of the connections of Margot Kidder and Christopher Reeve. Now, the actors in this film don't have that connection, which is too bad. Nope. Who does? But they don't.
You know what, Jason?
There's a little
bit
there.
I have that connection with Brendan Routh myself. Well, that made up for a lot.
Look, I was trying not to throw Kate Bosworth under the bus because I think she's the problem. But look, anyway, before we get to the actors, what do you think about this idea of like what makes this movie, you know, work or not work in terms of having seen the other two movies? And like, because that's my theory, is that I think it's sort of like playing on our feelings about that connection from those first two movies, but also like zeroing in a little bit more on like, when is Superman interesting?
So I wish that they had really delved. So my headcanon going into what I knew about this film when I went to see it in the theater was that they were going to lean really heavily into the fact that Clark Kent, Kal-El, Superman, was heartbroken over the fact that this woman that he loved, who acknowledged she loved him, they knew each other, they couldn't be together. And you know, and that he went away to try and figure himself out. And then he comes back to find out that their quick dalliance created another life, and he's got to deal with that and deal with this relationship with him and Lois and try and figure out how to make all of that stuff work as Clark and as Superman. And I thought that that was kind of going to be what the film was about, and it wasn't really.
No, it's in there.
Yeah.
Right. It's in there.
But at the end. Yeah.
But that's not what the film is about.
No, but I so wish it was.
I think part of why I liked this one is that it has a straightforward, coherent plot that starts at the beginning of the movie and goes through to the end. And yeah, it could go a little faster. I mean, it's a 2.5-hour movie that could easily lose 40 minutes and it would be a really good movie. Because we don't need repetitive shots of things happening. It's just like, get to it, man. But I think the plot makes sense. It is, you know, it's a standard comic book plot. It's a pretty good one. And then you have the added wrinkle of the interpersonal relationship, which is that's a story we haven't seen Superman in yet.
Right.
So I like that.
I agree with David about the length of it absolutely hurting it, because it's just too much fluff in there and too much stuff that doesn't need to be in there. And honestly, like, as somebody who likes to see a relationship as an important and not just a bolted on part of a superhero movie, I'm supposed to like this movie. This is supposed to be for me, because there's so much interpersonal. And I found myself just being annoyed that he was Superman was so mopey throughout. It was like, it was too much. Yes, be mopey through part of it. Deal with your stuff and maybe even leave some of your stuff unresolved. But there was too much of it between him being mopey and so much of it being how he's dealing with the fact that he's encountered kryptonite and therefore temporarily doesn't have his powers. It kind of prevents him from being Superman for too long a part of the movie. And I think if you had cut the movie down, as David suggests, maybe that wouldn't have been so noticeable. I don't mind Superman without his powers. I don't mind him worrying about his interpersonal relationship. But if the movie is that long, all of the things that are wrong with it are going to be, and right with it, are going to be magnified. Too long. And if you had just cut the movie short, you probably would have had more balance.
Maybe it's because this is the first time that I saw this movie. And I had just seen Superman's 1 and 2. I didn't think it felt that long. I mean, a bit long, yes. And I saw the time code when I started and I was like, oh, my God. And it, to me, it didn't feel as long as those numbers told me that it was going to. And I think maybe part of it is because it was all fresh for me because I had never seen it before. But also a little bit of some of the longer shots and the lingering on stuff to me actually felt like yet another homage to those really, really slow movies that were at the beginning. But Jason, I think your premise is pretty spot on. I think those are the interesting things about Superman. And I think that the reason that I like them, that I like this movie is in part because of that and in part because of what David was saying about it's actually got a coherent plot. It's got a beginning and a middle and an end. And it's one movie. It is, however, one movie that's got like the several really big sort of plot themes. It's not just Superman dealing with his inner stuff, and it's not just Superman dealing with his figuring out how to use his powers in order to hurt Lex Luthor. Like, those each could have probably held their own movie, and I think that's like, it's two different sides of what Superman is trying to do and get across here that are both happening. And to me, I mean I guess there's certainly stuff you could take out, but there was nothing where I was watching it and thought, I wish this part was gone, because I was interested in all of it enough. And again, I will own the fact that I'm happy to watch Brandon Routh just sit there and stare for as long as he would care to. But I wasn't bored. I didn't feel like it dragged in the same way that the earlier movies did. And I felt like both of those pieces of Superman were maybe more fleshed out than they needed to be for one single movie. But I thought it kind of worked. Again, we haven't gotten to casting yet, but just in terms of the basic themes of Superman, I thought that was interesting. And he wasn't without his powers for more than like, what, 15 minutes or something? Or is my sense of time really off?
No, it's very brief.
But it's kind of, it feels elongated because of it happens in such a long stretch, and because you know it's going to resolve, but at some point I'm just waiting for it to resolve because you know it has to happen. And I that gets to a problem I have with the movie, because that is, it's not the logical ending of the movie when he's rescued, but it does feel like all the stuff after that is tacked on.
Shelley? I literally have a line in my notes. It's about 8 lines from the end that says, feels like maybe the movie should have ended already. I mean, this is not a movie with just third act problems. It's got third act problems. And part of the problem with the third act is that there's kind of a fourth act. And
it's got like a 2 epilogue problem.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, once they get out to sea, but especially after the crystal bomb goes off, there's way too much of everything. I actually like the scenes of Superman saving the city, but there's like when we're on like Lex Island and there's like lots of stuff on the boat after Lex has left the boat where the kid is in peril and Lois and James Marsden comes with his plane and that goes on for a long time. Right. And then on Lex's island with Superman goes on for a long time. And when he disappears into the core of the earth in order to lift up Lex Island and throw it into space, he's gone for a long time. It just is all a lot. Hey, everybody, this is the time of year when we remind you how you can support this podcast by becoming a member of The Incomparable. You can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge to support this podcast directly. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. That's it. Choose which shows on the network you'd like to support, including this one. If you check the box for The Incomparable Mothership, your contribution will come to us after a few fees are taken out. And if you listen to other podcasts on the network, you can also check their boxes. and spread it around. As a thank you for supporting us, members receive lots of extras. There are several exclusive podcast feeds, including an ad-free special edition of this very podcast, The Incomparable Mothership. There are bootlegs of lots of different live recording sessions, a special feed full of bonus episodes that only members get to hear, and access to a fun members-only Discord. It really is fun. You should check it out. But you got to be a member to do it. New members also receive some free Incomparable swag. That is right. So we're going to do some bonus episodes as we do all the time. So many things we're going to put in the feed. Commentary tracks are very popular. You watch a movie, you play an MP3, and suddenly we're sitting right there with you commenting on the movie you're watching. There are contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 a month. Annual equivalents are available, of course. If you'd like to support us, go theincomparable.com/members. Sign up. You can get this very podcast with no ads in it, plus a whole lot more. A whole lot more. So much good stuff. Check it out. Theincomparable.com/members.
One of the big fundamental things about the movie for me, I try to look at this through the lens of, you know, what Roger Ebert said about taking a movie on its own terms. And this is a movie that Warner Brothers brass, you know, whatever the mythologizing is about how Bryan Singer had this passionate vision, blah, blah, blah. Well, the screenwriters went on vacation with him and basically put together the story. And that's not something that happens in a case where it wasn't the result of executives going, hey, so we're just going to make this continue the continuity of the two good Superman movies.
Yeah.
You guys reverse engineer a movie out of that. And that to me is where a lot of the structural issues of the movie buckling under its own weight come from, where you get to the natural end of the movie and you've got more movie to do because, you know, in theory, you're going to do a sequel. And it right. sounds like there were multiple visions of what that sequel was going to be sure. and that it underperformed. So it didn't matter. But you set up all of this stuff, like you have the technical debt of picking up that quarter century old narrative and translating it into something that'll move forward. And this is what you get, is something that has a lot of good parts. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, for convenience's sake, some of the worst stuff about it, like the way that they wrote Lois Lane, which I wouldn't put on Kate Bosworth because I don't think she was behind the final draft keyboard for that. You know, you set certain things up that end up poking holes in something, like you're constantly plugging holes in the ship that is continuing to get shot up as you're continuing to
ship?
Sail it.
A ship, you say? Oh, a ship. I would say to that, Moises, is that only, I mean, it's yet another homage to the first two Superman movies, that of course Warner is going to be meddling with it and have bigger plans that are going to affect it creatively. Some other content related things. I mentioned this earlier, but I want to get back to it here. Two scenes, especially, I really appreciate in this movie for doing what I said earlier, which is giving Superman a problem to solve, because the question is not, can he do it? Because he can do anything. It's how can he figure it out? Because in the end, the problem is what challenges him. So, for example, there is a ridiculous set piece, which is straight out of Superman, you know, the original Superman movie, so it's fine, where there's a space shuttle on a Boeing 777 that is apparently a passenger configuration full of people, which is just doesn't make any sense, but that's okay. Because, and at both these points, the movie's kind of a disaster movie, and I kind of love it. And the idea is, how is Superman going to save? So he, like, flies up there, and he gets the space shuttle off, but the plane is doing, like, Mach 1, and it's burst, and it's, like, burning up, and he tries to grab it and slow it down, and it pops a wing off of it. So that's worse. So how is he going to handle this? And he's trying to figure out, like, how he can maneuver it, and I like that about it. And then later, he lands it in the middle of the ballpark. And then later, the other disaster movie set is when the rumble from the, like, crystals earthquake is coming toward Metropolis. Mm-hmm. And there's an extended scene, and it's probably too long again, even though I like it, where, and this goes to the joy of Superman too a little bit, where I could have seen maybe more of it, but at least it's Superman being Superman, where he has to work to save the city. So he has to, like, blow the gas explosion back and catch the Daily Planet globe that has fallen off the building, and like saving the guy who falls out of his crane and all of that, where it's like, first off, that's very Superman. And second, it's like, how does Superman deal with this earthquake and all of these things that are happening at once? And I thought that was fun too, because those are like, it's about, like, how does he do his job? I guess I find more interesting than, like, of course he can crush coal into diamonds, but that's not very interesting. But how he solves the problem of the Boeing 777 that's going Mach 1 and burst into flames, even though his solution is, you know, grab it. I get it. But, like, the way it's shown, it is dramatic, and you can see him like, I'll try this. Oh, that didn't work. Okay, I'll try something else. And in the end, he's like holding the nose up as they crash to the earth, and he stops it just in time and crumples the nose cone. I thought that was all, like, that's good Superman stuff. Like, as set pieces go for a Superman movie, seeing him try to use his brain with his powers, like, that stuff all worked for me. And I found it really satisfying, actually.
But related to that also is the idea that Superman is doing big things and he's also stopping off to do little things, which we saw from the Superman 1, I think, is where we see it, where he, like,
gets,
I'm going to save Lois.
Right,
exactly. I'm going to save Lois, even though a lot of other people are going to perish. And this movie, there's one instance of it, I think. And mostly he's doing big things. But you see that as the tension. It's like Superman wants to solve the problem that's right in front of him right now. And he's not about priorities. He's going to do all of it. It's just going to take him a minute to get all the things done. And I like that as a sort of a tiny homage back to the original movie and how people can be frustrated with Superman because they want him to solve their problem instead of somebody else's.
I love the scene that sort of is the text of exactly what you said, which is there's the scene where he flies up and he's up above the earth and he's basically like listening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For something. He's like doing his police scanner of the entire thing. He says, I hear everything, right? And I think the question that this movie doesn't really want to grapple with, because none of these movies can really grapple with it, is, you know, if you go off for 5 years, you're just choosing to, like, but you forget about 5 years. If you want to, like, go on vacation for a day, a bunch of people are going to die that day. And like,
or pretend to be a reporter for a day.
Right, exactly. So how do you do that? But it is a really nice moment when he's up there, because that's his moment of like, okay, what's my next thing? And it might be a big thing or a small thing, or it seems to be a chain of things, right? Where it's like, well, I'm on to stop the dam from bursting, but along the way, this guy fell out of his cherry picker, and I'm going to swoop him. I mean, the guy who falls from the crane, it's really dynamic because he like catches him and lowers him right down to the street and then zips on. He's got other stuff to do, and it's just a nice little bit. And the taxi driver yells at him and drops his cigar, which ignites all the gas explosions. It's all connected, people.
I want to give major props to the visual effects artists who made all of those action sequences sing, because there's no way that came from the mind of Bryan Singer or the screenwriters. That like the way that all of that stuff flows so beautifully and works so well telling story was pre-visualized by people who are buried in the credits whose names you don't know,
right,
who deserve radically more credit for it than they get.
And clearly inspired. This goes back to all our friends, people we know who work in VFX, right? And people are like, oh, computers, we don't like CGI and all that. It's like, people who work doing VFX love movies. They love movies. They think visually. They are filmmakers and they love movies. And I will tell you, I don't think I know people who worked on Superman Returns, but I will tell you, they clearly love Superman 1 and 2 and studied it. And and the way he flies, another thing I was going to mention later, the way he flies, where after all of these Marvel movies, the way, and very few Marvel superheroes even fly, when they do, it's very like jet plane fly or Iron Man fly. He does so much like floating and somersaulting and just kind of hovering,
so,
and the gentle breeze blowing. And that happens in the Christopher Reeve movies. And clearly the VFX artists who worked on this were like, that's how we want this guy to fly. And it's beautiful. And they really did a great job with it.
Including the way that the cape flows as he is making all those different movements. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, capes are silly, except they're beautiful. That's why they draw capes. Yeah. It's because they're beautiful. Yes. They look so good.
Exactly.
Yeah, like people make hay out of, oh, Iron Man came 2 years after this, and then Marvel completely redefined superhero stuff. I wouldn't say overall for the better, because there is stuff that this movie definitely gets right when it comes to the choreography of the big action set pieces and the staging, all of it. That the team that was working on this had the time to breathe that Marvel visual effects teams apparently never have from the very beginning.
Somewhere buried in Wikipedia, it says that multiple VFX teams worked on this, which I know nothing about movie production, so perhaps that's standard.
It
like
is.
If you have a big
it
set
is.
Piece,
very.
But it's interesting to me that doesn't seem apparent when you watch the movie, which is a good thing.
So yeah. to your point, Jason, about especially the scene, the baseball scene, right? Because that's the big iconic, you know, like this is Superman's coming out party. He's back.
He's back.
And
the American pastime.
Right. And I think they did talk or at least visually, I heard that conversation that the point that you're making about how he solves the problem is the thing that makes Superman Superman. But how he resolves that problem, right, by catching the plane in and of itself is amazing because he's catching the plane to stop the plane, to slow the plane down, but he's only using enough power to make sure that he only crumples the plane as opposed to like crushing the plane, right? And just the thought about how, you know, the psyche of Superman, I always think about that. I think there was an episode of Smallville where Clark is trying out for the football team and he makes the football team, but his dad doesn't want him to join the football team because he's afraid he's going to hurt somebody. And he's like, Dad, every day I do this.
Right?
You know? Mm-hmm. So I constantly think about that. And just the challenge of making anything with Superman in it is so great because, right, like it's at any moment he could lose control.
Right. And he's calibrating the physics there.
Right.
To not kill the people in the plane, but slow the plane down enough that he can get it to a stop with them still alive.
Right.
And although it's you don't see him, he's not like talking about that and all that, but you see Brandon Routh is flying around and he's trying to get it to stop spinning and he's trying to get it to slow down and not break apart and all those things. And you can tell he's trying to figure out how do I save these people? And then the wing comes off. It's a great moment, right? Where it's like, oh, okay.
Next. Not that way.
And he gets them just right. And I like the fact, talking about the special effects, I really like the fact that when he does stop the plane at the baseball park, I know superhero physics are nonsense anyway, but I like the fact that when he does that, the nose does crumple and the metal ripples up the plane. And like, you get some sense of the physics and the weight of the fact that he's now completely stopped this plane and is holding it upright. And then it goes boom and lands. It's just very well done.
There's some of that in the sound design too. When he's messing around with planes, you hear the metal sort of creaking, especially when he's got the space shuttle, the 747 and the shuttle, and he's between the two of them and he's, you know, holding or crushing or whatever he's doing to the various pieces, and you could hear the metal sound. That, I mean, realistic is not the right word to say, but it makes sense when you hear the sound.
It sounds believable.
It fits the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For an unbelievable thing, but it makes it feel like it's grounded in reality, right? Grounded in physics, even though the physics doesn't make sense. It feels real and sounds real.
Another thing visually that I love, certainly moments in that scene, but throughout the whole movie, is there are frames and shots that look like Alex Ross paintings.
Mm.
I mean, this looks like a comic book in a lot of scenes.
Well, that scene with him above the earth, obviously that is artist rendered. Mm-hmm. It looks like it could have come off of anybody's cover, a DC cover at any point.
The quibble that I've got, though, is as great as the sequences themselves look and flow, they generally don't have as much drama to them as I would want, whether in the way that they resolve. It just, as self-contained units within the film that they are, they play great. But I'm never really terribly worried about Superman landing that plane. And I would like to feel, I mean, I get it. Superman's very good at all these things. He's a god among men, all that stuff. I wish that there had been some storytelling to how this really is a difficult thing and how great it is that he is pulling it off and not just kind of leaving it as a very pretty diorama within the movie.
I mean, the wing breaking off is a good moment where he's like, oh,
yeah,
where he's got that. But I see your point. It does, like Lois on the plane, like, they hang a lantern on it. It is the worst lantern hanging I've seen in a long time, where she literally is like, why, if this is an incredible space launch that's never been attempted before, why is there only one TV network on the plane?
Right.
And the answer is, we'll tell you later. And I'm like, what?
Right.
It is completely nonsense. They could have just said she was the pool reporter and we could have all been like, yeah, that's a thing. That could be. Because you want Lois on the plane. I get it, right? You want Lois on the plane because it's Superman and Lois is on the plane and all that. But even when they talk about the pacing of this movie, that's one of the parts that really made me angry is I enjoy it being a disaster movie, but they are showing random people. I guess they're not passengers because this is a space launch and not a passenger flight, even though it is just shot in an airplane interior. But there are lots of people there that look like they're just sort of like there with their carry-on bags, which fall out
for the ride. Right.
It doesn't make any sense at all. But we spend so much time watching people reach for oxygen masks and try to buckle their seatbelts, and it's Lois, but it's also everybody else on the plane. And there are moments in there that are beautiful. There's that great moment where you look out the airplane window and Superman just zip, flies right by. It's like, oh, that's so good. But
there's a thing on the wing. There's a thing on the wing of the plane.
Well, and then there's no wing at all. But there's way too much of that. And I know why they're trying to do it, because they want to have the stakes of Superman saving the day. But like, I get that there are people on the plane and that Lois is there and that we want. I mean, Lois is, we haven't seen Lois before. And so our connection to her is not as strong. And then the scenes in the plane don't go on as long. Like the action's happening outside the plane.
The most annoying thing regarding Lois in this scene for me is it's the beginning of the movie, literally beating up Lois Lane, where she's thrown into the back bulkhead.
Right.
Like, why? Right. Why? Right. Why? Why did we need that? Why do we need her getting hit in the face by a metal door
she's
later?
She's on a plane.
She's the only one. She's the only one getting tossed around.
I do appreciate that the reason that she is because she got out of her seat to help the other person who had fallen down. She gets that person buckled in, and that's when all hell breaks loose and she starts flying around. But it was just like, I am okay believing that Superman can save the plane in all of the ways that he does. But for some reason in the same movie, I have trouble believing that Lois Lane survives all of that without like many, many broken bones.
Many injuries.
She loses the ability to spell. She forgets to pick her kid up. She's severely concussed.
Well, I think
she didn't know how to spell to start with.
She didn't know how to spell before. That's pretty canonical. But I would say also, when you're strapped to a space shuttle that's launching to space and you're just on a passenger plane and then you're going Mach 1 and are on fire and losing a wing, I'm not really that concerned about if you can get to the air or have a belt on or are being jostled by carry-on bags, because that's not really the life-threatening issue. It's the plane being on fire. And so the movie being like, what if she can't get back to her seat? I'm like, I don't care if she's in her seat. They're strapped to a space shuttle that's going into space. That's worse.
And all I could think was, this is like, you know, when they were trying to be very technically realistic in the original Star Trek, and they said, well, you don't have sound in space. Well, it looked weird, so we add the sound of the spaceship, right? Just the whoosh. And I think that's what this was. It's like, we won't believe it's a plane in jeopardy unless it's a standard, you know, airplane, airport 77 kind of crowd of people with carry-ons and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like if it's just a news reporter covering a military plane, because it's an Air Force plane, it's labeled Air Force.
So,
you know, just have a minimum compliment. It's enough that Lois is there and there are other people, but it doesn't have to be a crowded passenger plane.
Shout out to the PR person, though. The character of the PR person in this, where literally everything is going wrong and things are going to explode and everybody's going to die. And she has no new information about anything. And yet every beat when something terrible happens, she's like, it's all perfectly normal. Everything's going
to
be fine. This happens all the time.
Right.
And it's like, that is perfect depiction of PR, which is there's no information. She doesn't know anything, but she's like, immediately, instinctually, she's like, no, it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. It's not fine, lady. It's not fine.
I think, sadly, it's Lois it's a stand-in for Lois's an intrepid reporter. She's good at her job, as opposed to Clark Kent, who we never see report anything.
Nope.
But Lois, you know, we later hear that she's won a Pulitzer Prize. Okay, sure. And so she is not afraid to go into danger, and whenever she goes into danger, she encounters Superman. And she is helpful with her fellow passengers. So it's a bad way of standing in for showing that Lois is, in fact, the intrepid reporter in this story. And it also puts her at odds later on. You know, we see Perry White, who wants the Superman-based story as opposed to the Blackout story. They keep going back and forth about, you know, what's the really important story? And basically, Perry White is through the whole thing saying sex sells, sex sells. Yeah. And that's his only point. Yeah. And sadly, Lois' character in many ways, but in this way specifically, pays the price of being that intrepid, you know, reporter who happens to be a woman who had a thing with Superman.
I do like that she fights it and she's frustrated by it. And Perry says, every other, I think he actually says every other lady reporter is on a rooftop somewhere, which made me roll my eyes, but also be like, oh yeah, Perry White. Okay, I get it. But Shelley, how dare you suggest that Clark isn't going to get to the bottom of the power outage story eventually? Maybe. Eventually. He does not.
Maybe.
No, okay. Lois solves that one too. She does both stories and does them both well.
You know, Jerry would have gotten that story.
Yeah, no, he died though. So it's too bad.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
I like the scene where James Marsden looks out at Clark and is like, how tall is Clark?
Right.
Yes. And then they're like, no, because again, hanging a lantern, but it's funny, but it's like, did nobody want to mention that the day that Clark came back to work is the day Superman reappeared? Yeah. Come on, everybody.
Okay. So that moment, and then, you know, Brandon Routh turning and making the goofiest face possible. The Great Caesar's Ghost, it's a bird, it's a plane. All of those were so beautifully done. Yeah. I think those were better than any of the other movies too.
In the context is that the kid with the cell phone, the 2006 cell phone, takes a picture, a close up of Superman saving Parker Posey, but Jimmy Olsen's picture is this just of a dot flying between buildings, and that leads to it's a bird, it's a plane. No, it's okay.
And then he gets cut off. It's so nice. I actually had to look up. I thought I had the right date. You would know it because you're right about Apple. But I actually had to look it up and go, oh yeah, they didn't have iPhones.
2007.
The iPhone 2007. Movie.
Yeah.
Well, they use the word camera phone, which just memories.
Yeah. It's good times.
Yeah. And the blown up photo that kid took with that phone.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. It is the biggest technological impossibility in the movie.
Yeah, because that shot is 320 by 240 right. At best.
I believe the man could fly. I did not believe that photo.
Did not believe that. No. Don't believe that phone could take that picture. No, it's just, it's a good joke at Jimmy Olsen's expense. All right. Characters and actors in this, because that's a big part of it. Brandon Routh, we've talked about. Erica is all here for it. At the time he was unknown. I just wanted to say, at the time he was unknown and cast in this, and now I know Brandon Routh. I've seen him in a bunch of stuff, and so watching it from the perspective of today, I was like, oh yeah, that's a pretty good choice. He's pretty good in this. I enjoy him. But at the time, it was like, who is this guy?
I did not realize that. I guess I only discovered him recently through a Hallmark movie that I mentioned in a previous podcast, I won't go into that again. He's a very pretty man. So like, obviously, yes, I enjoy looking at him. But for me, I think he is incredibly charismatic. He just has ineffable charm that is, I mean, like, after watching this, I was like, you know, it's Christopher Reeve is an impossible act to follow, basically. But boy, oh boy, did they do their best, I think, in casting Brendan Routh, because mm-hmm. I think he you know, nobody's going to hit quite the same heights, but I think he captures the same sort of feel of charisma that I got from Christopher Reeve. So I was just so excited to watch him. But I think there was zero chemistry with Kate Bosworth, and I think that she looks like she's about 12, and uh-huh. I just could not get past either of those things.
That's my thing. I think she did a good job with what she was given, but my big problem was, and I looked it up, she was 22 when they made this, which means Lois should have she's got to be in her early 30s.
She's got a 5-year-old son. Mid-30s.
She's got a 5-year-old son. She's had a career.
Amazingly.
She's known Superman.
Amy Adams.
All that happened when she was 17.
Amazingly, Amy Adams, who later played Lois Lane in another set of Superman movies, was apparently one of the people they saw and would have been a perfectly suitable age to play the part.
Yep.
In this movie. And yeah, I will. So I like this movie. I think it's got a lot of issues and I think it's too long, but I enjoyed it. Yeah. And I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed the other two Superman movies. Kate Bosworth, to me, is the biggest failure in the movie. And it's not her fault because she's the one who got cast. She's going to take the job. Right. She's too young. She doesn't read as Lois Lane to me. I feel like there is a weight that could be brought to that character, having the connection with Superman and being abandoned for 5 years and having a child and then having this new relationship that she built with Cyclops from the X-Men.
Right.
And
having suspicions about the child.
Yeah. And I just don't get it. And they don't have any chemistry either. Right. And it's heartbreaking because if they could have nailed that, this movie would have flown. I almost said, oh my God.
Yes.
But
I was hoping you
would. It's just a miss.
Jason, it goes back to the script for me. I don't know that casting a different actor would have substantially improved the fact that Lois Lane, who to me in Superman canon, and let me get ahead of the people who are going to quote John Byrne to me chapter and verse.
Oh, yeah.
I know Superman
John
comics
Byrne didn't invent Superman.
And media. No, he did not. Like I know Superman canon incredibly, incredibly well down to like I could have trivia contests with Mark Waid. And the thing that bugs me the most about this is that in the first two movies of three, of which this is the third, because that's how we're counting.
It's a trilogy. Yep.
Lois is a co-lead and Lois is an intrinsic part of the narrative given equal weight to Kal-El, Clark Kent, Superman. And in this, she is a prop. She is a prop to be thrown around, to be a plot device. She is more of a damsel in distress than she is in the Fleischer cartoons, than she was in the black and white TV show. And like that's the most infuriating thing to me about the movie, that you could put any number of other actresses in this part. But the way that it is written is so fundamentally it is undeserving to for what Lois Lane as a character deserves.
I agree about the script, absolutely. I also think she does as well as she can given a number of factors. I also give I also think it's badly directed because even her facial expressions and the way she looks up at Superman in sort of this plaintive way, it's just not Lois Lane at all. And I feel like the actress has been asked to do certain things. And I think that's a funny thing because sometimes you have a performer that's just not right and the performance suffers and it becomes wooden or stiff or boring. Her performance is not wooden or stiff or boring. It's badly written, it's badly directed, and she's too young, but she's actually trying. She's doing stuff. She's got heart.
She's trying.
It's unfortunate.
She's miscast. And I'm not going to say, I just wanted to answer really quickly to Moises's point what I'm really saying is better casting might have papered over some of it and there isn't better casting to do it. Erica, go ahead.
Yeah, as I completely agree, because as somebody who has watched an awful lot of poorly written Doctor Who from the 1960s, 70s and 80s, sometimes you can take stuff that's just not great and still have an actor elevate it. And I feel like she was doing her best, but somebody who maybe had a little bit more experience in movies and a little bit more sort of gravitas could have papered over some of that in a way that she didn't. And I still think she did her best. And there are moments where I saw glimpses. I definitely saw a few moments. It just was, there weren't enough moments.
That's what gets me, because I don't disagree with Moises that she is not as active at all as
terribly,
like, Margot
Kidder
really just is, like, her Lois is, it, she's in it, right? It is those two. And here, there are those moments, and that's what I find baffling, and I don't know. It's one of those questions of, like, what happened in rewrites? What happened in conception?
Because, oh, no, Jason, I figured it out. That kiss at the end of Superman 2, right. It was just so powerful.
Right. That it
made Lois so dumb.
Right,
just
so,
incredibly
no,
dumb.
But it reverse aged her.
Like, look, there are things in this movie where she's taking the lead and Clark is useless, that it's like, I see what the movie's trying to do. And the moment that absolutely intends to be the moment that is the great moment for Lois Lane is that Lois saves Superman in that moment.
Right.
She jumps in, she goes down in the water, she pulls him up. He has been pulling up planes and stuff all his life and saving people, and she saves Superman. But it's just not enough, right? I applaud that it's there, because it's like the movie is saying, see, Lois saves Superman in the end, but it's like, but this movie doesn't really earn it.
I also cannot help but think she's diving into rough seas with a concussion,
right,
with a severe concussion from getting slammed
in
the head by a metal door.
James Marsden is going to stand there dry and watch and make sure she's okay, but not dive in after her. No.
Well,
just stand there.
He wades in the water. He wades in the water, and then
his kid is there. Right. He's
his
not going to.
Yeah, he's.
Yeah, that kid is everywhere. That kid.
That
I mean,
kid
so
there?
Many, so much time at the office, so
right.
much time in dangerous
yeah.
situation. They just can't get a babysitter. I don't know what
right.
that kid is.
Are
always
all reporters
with
terrible parents? Is this
apparently.
A real world
yes.
thing, or is this
yes.
in the movie?
Turns out, when you're Perry White's nepo nephew,
right.
you get to bring your kid to work.
And could we have used maybe 5 fewer minutes of him walking around with a wastebasket on his head, growling?
I love that part. That was the only part
it's
I liked.
Great,
in
it's
that
great.
But there was a lot
like
of it.
Three times as much of it than you need. Yeah.
So I just want to say, so Kate yep. Bosworth was definitely very young, but she's only 4 years younger than Brandon Routh. So she's got great genes, and she was young when they casted her, because she does look significantly younger than everybody else that's with her.
Well, I mean, it's like the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet, that instead of Claire Danes, it was originally Natalie Portman, and
oh, wow.
they started shooting the movie,
oh, wow.
and she just read way too young
yeah.
for it to not seem real creepy.
Also, I can buy Superman being eternally young, right?
Sure.
right?
Yeah.
He doesn't have to pack a lunch when he goes to space.
No, he doesn't.
Eat.
He just
he
eats
eat.
His cape, okay? The edible cape. What he says. It's like Red Vines.
He's in suspended
yeah.
animation. It's fine.
Right.
It's fine.
Something like that. Okay, so I want to, before we talk about Lex Luthor, and we can talk about the other villains too, Parker Posey, Cal Penn is a guy who pushes buttons and is
and
not
says
a,
has
nothing.
No
and says nothing.
I was going to say, does
like
he even
one.
Have a line?
No, it's so
he has one.
He has one line.
Before
yes.
we get to Kevin Spacey as Lex, I wanted to say I really like Eva Marie Saint. She appears at the end,
yes.
but she really only has one scene as Clark's mom at the beginning. But I
yeah.
love it, because if you remember those first two Superman movies, Clark grows up in Smallville, and then his dad dies, and it's very sad. And then he says to his mom, "Welp, bye."
And we never see her again.
No, and he sends money home to her.
Yeah.
That is specifically
yeah.
stated.
Yes,
in,
but that's
in
that's
the first movie.
Like the but the movie is no longer interested in the
yep.
person who raised Clark Kent. And mm-hmm. so for
and
there
her
to
name
be,
is Martha too.
Yeah. Mm,
Why did you say that name?
And. So to have that moment, and there's the flashbacks that are kind of fun too, where they do a kind of a better job of what a kid would look like running very fast through corn instead of looking like
yeah.
he's a marionette.
Yes.
But I like Eva Marie Saint is cast in that, which is a great Shelley.
Yeah, well, in both movies, they hired classic actors to play those roles. In the original, in the Superman one, it was Phyllis Thaxter, who's less well known but who was a classic star, and of course Glenn Ford played his father.
Yep.
Eva Marie Saint, who is still alive. We have a joke at Lions Towers and Shields that when we mention an actor who is still alive and we do a movie about them, they sadly
oh, no.
depart.
Stay
the world.
Alive,
oh,
no. Eva Marie.
Stay
she's
alive,
99.
Eva Marie
stay alive,
oh,
no matter what
go,
occurs.
Go, Eva Marie, go.
We like
no,
that you were
and
in
it
this
was
movie.
Great cast.
casting. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what it says about that, they're like, yes, we're going to actually show Clark's mom again. Yes, thank you. I felt like they were closing the loop. Again, this is one of the things this movie sort of does. Closing the loop from Superman 1 of like, yeah, remember his mom? Anyone? He yes, okay,
well,
fine.
When we see her late in the movie, it has been so long since we saw her earlier in the movie that it makes you go, wait a minute. Eva Marie, who's Eva Marie Saint?
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute.
It's so weird too, because it's like she's just standing outside, like, yes, yes. It's like, well, I mean, I don't know. I wish she had.
She's
more
actually
to do
weirdly
there,
good in a very small part. I think she handles it quite well.
But what's she going to do? She can't be like, I'm Superman's mom.
She can't.
Right. Martha Kent.
Yeah, right. She can't do that. She can't do that.
Two other casting things that I really, really liked. It was a nice touch. The very first scene, which I don't think you need at all. I don't care how Lex becomes rich, but fine, you have that scene. But it had Noelle Neal, who played Lois in the 50s TV series and in the original movies. She's that elderly woman. And then later on in the bar, when you have Jimmy and Clark sitting in the bar watching the news about the shuttle launch, the bartender is played by Jack Larson, who played Jimmy Olsen in the 50s series. Nice, and there is a wonderful grace note as Superman is saving the day, and it just does a quick cut to the bar. It's not even zooming in. It's just part of this larger scene. But the two Jimmy Olsens hug because they're so happy. I loved that. There's like, oh, that's beautiful.
Nice.
Can I ask what the hell was in Jason White's inhaler? Was it like, is it kryptonite particles like to keep him from like discovering his powers? Like, what was in that inhaler?
No, I think he really has asthma.
He really has
asthma.
Really
is allergic to everything.
I think it was the of all the things that they didn't triple underline and highlight in the movie, I think it was Lex exposing him to green kryptonite that triggered the manifestation of his powers. Somehow.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that made any sense to me. Mm. And the movie didn't lead me to it. I had to headcanon it.
There is that scene where he holds it out to the kid and the kid's looking at it and is kind of creeped out, right? But he's not affected by it in the way Superman is, but he obviously reacts to it in a way, and Lex is like, oh, what's that about? And then it's sort of about nothing. But yeah, there's a lot of headcanon going on there, but I like it because that's a fun scene that kind of doesn't do anything or go anywhere other than be the mystery of, is this Superman's kid or not? Which is not as much of a mystery as I remember. It's very clear. I was looking at a Wikipedia article about the another appearance of Brandon Routh in the Arrowverse, where he played Ray Palmer, the Atom, on Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. But then they did a crossover with alternate universes, and he did play Superman again in that. And there's this reference, and the article on Wikipedia was like, oh, he makes reference to his son, Jason, thereby showing that he did learn about his sons. And it's like, it's very clear that he knows that he's his son. He literally says that he's his son to him in the scene at the end of the movie. The author of that Wikipedia article forgot, maybe tuned out a little early. I don't know what's going on there. But so I wanted to say, Lex, watching Superman 1, one of my fond memories is Lex Luthor's totally crazy real estate scheme where he's like, California, I break it. It falls into the ocean. Now I got the beach. Yay for me. It's delightful and bizarre and just comic booky and I go with it. And one of the things I like about this movie is Lex Luthor. Oh, that guy, he's stealing meteorites. He's got dreams of more beachfront real estate that he's going to create for himself. He tells the same story. I believe it's the same story. Like, my dad's.
Yep, it is.
My dad said to me, son, you gotta get the land. And this is, I'm going to take a Kryptonian crystal and throw it in the ocean. And it's going to make a giant Lex Island that's going to swamp the rest of North America. But it doesn't matter. People from Europe will come and live on my beaches. Is like,
and,
okay,
and it'll have veins of green kryptonite, so Superman will never be able to
can't go there. It's just exactly what I expect a Lex Luthor scheme to be, which is, it's ridiculous and involves real estate and stolen meteorites.
So this is the carryover from the original movies that I hate the most, because I mean, they set up Kevin Spacey. People have given him credit for this performance being really great and everything. I think it's incredibly lazy. he is mean. He is vicious. He is bent on revenge. It is very one note, and he shouts one time. Does it match to the Gene Hackman version of the character? Yeah, in the least interesting ways, because to some extent, Lex is supposed to be something of a criminal genius. And if you're really hewing really, really close to the Gene Hackman version of the character, he's much more of a fabulous clown.
Yep.
Let me double back to something I mentioned earlier. Who packed lunch to go on Lex Island?
Lex Island.
What were they going to eat on Lex Island when they destroyed the entire landmass of North America out of
poker.
Revenge?
Crypto crops.
They brought some suitcases. What was the plan?
Unclear.
What was the plan, other than destroy the entirety of North America?
When you drop a bomb that's going to create a new continent, what you should really do is just be in a boat nearby and stay there and watch.
Right. I mean, okay, I will say that didn't occur to me, and it's funny, but what I thought as I was watching the movie was just, he was not planning on staying there forever at that point. He was waiting for Superman to show up so that he could stab him, and then they were going to take the helicopter, go someplace else, and, you know, get construction materials and, I don't know, dirt, because there's no dirt in this place. Like, how are you going to grow a tree for landscaping? I don't know. It's not a completely
crypto
finished
trees.
Plan, but yeah. I honestly didn't have a problem with him going there right away to lure in Superman, because I thought that was the idea.
And I think probably it was the kind of thing where he didn't actually know what was going to happen, right? He didn't know what was going to happen in the model room.
Right.
And it surprised him.
And they say, he should have this learned isn't like, from that. This isn't like with the train. And he's like, no, it's right. not. This is not what, because he's a mad villain who's just decided to throw things in the water and see
Let's see what happens, which is great for
a plot point of view. Because I hate the idea that he's got this master plan and it's going to go to fruition until it doesn't.
Some
the
men want to see the world burn and others want to make a continent.
Right. And the idea that he can make mistakes.
Other people want to terraform it.
That not all of the mistakes are made by his henchmen. Because in Superman 1, right. I came for Gene Hackman in Superman 1. I didn't like it. I don't enjoy that kind of performance, and then he has his henchmen sort of do most of the dumb stuff that happens, and in this movie Luthor does things that don't always work and he has to deal with them, and I kind of we can agree that Mr. the fellow who played him is not one of my favorite people, but I like the performance.
I did too.
This is my biggest disappointment with Gene Hackman is I never feel menace from him. He's just a clown. Yeah. And in this, you know, and apparently they did say, don't use Gene Hackman as a role model. Although it does fit kind of okay side by side. But this is a Lex Luthor that is actually evil, who is actually a cruel,
vicious, scary man. And you worry that he's going to hurt the people that you care about in the movie, and
exactly.
He could do it, and that it's not, buffoonery is not what's going to be what's saving you, because somebody, whether it was Lex or somebody else, made a dumb mistake, because he's perfectly capable of doing dastardly things.
It's why when Kitty is repulsed by him, like Miss Tessmacher in the first movie, it is, it kind of holds together better than it does with Miss Tessmacher, I think, because she gets that one line and she holds it for the whole movie. And then there is the moment, which David, you know, it's one of my favorite lines in the movie, where they say, but millions of people will die. And he says, billions. Once again, the press gets it wrong. He's like, no, you undersell me. I'm going to kill billions of people. And she's horrified. She's like, did you mean it about the billions? He's like, Oh yeah.
Sort of reminds me of political leaders that we may have had in our presence.
No.
The past.
Yeah, or CEOs of car and social media networks.
I just like, give me my credit. I'm going to kill billions of people, not millions. Right. Come on. I'm a billionaire, not a millionaire. What are you talking about? Oh, I mean, by my victims, that's what I meant. Also money, but also my victims. So,
Lex is one of those weird, ill-fitting parts of holding over the previous continuity where it's, he has to have some things in common with the previous iteration of him, but
real estate.
Like this is now the third act transformation of him into the vindictive monster who doesn't care how many billions of people he kills, and we've just literally added water, and here he is. unless you have actively gone, I'm going to do the homework and I'm going to watch the first two movies before I go to see this movie, Superman Returns, in theaters in 2006, and giving your audience homework to do to sell it. Like, it works for us because we saw those movies relatively recently and we see the continuity of it. But if you try to watch this movie cold, he just shows up fully formed in like end of a trilogy, evil villain mode. And it's a bit much, but
it works because we know he's been in jail.
And, well, because you can say the same thing about Superman, because one of the big criticisms we had of the first Superman movie was how much weirdly placed backstory there was. And in this movie, there's almost zero backstory other than the title card and the repeated explanation later on, because we all know what Superman is.
Yeah.
Whether we saw those first two movies recently or not, there's some assumption about who's Superman, who's his main nemesis. Even if you don't even remember the characteristics of Lex Luthor, you can probably ask a lot of people.
He's the bad guy.
I guess I'm just more pointing to the bigger issues with, like, at the time and even since then, going, what's a good Superman movie to start with? Superman Returns. There are two movies before it, but forget it. You can skip them.
I mean, the title right really there.
Right. Yeah. I don't think that you could go into this movie as the first film because it is so referential to the two that came before it. You know, like I the title and the way that the film is set is a wink and a nod to the fact that there were four movies. And we're going to pretend like the two ones that we universally say are terrible didn't exist, or at least exist in a universe outside of the two good ones. And now we've got this one. You can't start with the Brandon Routh one.
Yeah, you don't call your first movie in a series Superman Returns.
You call it Leonard Part 6.
No. Oh boy! Don't bring him into this. We already have too many bad actors here. Okay. Some other things that I'll just throw out is so James Marsden is in this. He's fine. It's a thankless part.
You know what though? I appreciate the fact that he ends up being a good guy.
He's a good guy.
At the beginning of the movie,
expecting him to be terrible.
I did not expect him to be a villain, but I did expect him to be like a smarmy git, and he wasn't. He was a nice guy, and he actually, the moment where the kid is trying to open the door, and you think, oh my God, he's got Superman powers, he's opening the door, and it's his dad that appears there. Like, that was genuinely heartwarming and surprising to me. I really like that, and I think he does a good job.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was fully expecting him to be the jealous, like reasonably jealous, right? Like, and it would have made sense. It would have sucked because he was upset with, you know, how all of this stuff played out, and you know, to kind of find out that this kid isn't, or at least there is a heavy suspicion that not only is this kid not your kid, but this kid is Superman's kid. Mm-hmm. It's a tough pill to swallow, and it would be perfectly reasonable to watch him like kind of walk away from all of this and say, you know what,
he could be incredibly insecure. He could sabotage Lois, and Lois, you know, in her romantic life, obviously, you know, she misses Superman and she's not going to get back together with him, and that's not really the central point of the story. But when you're watching the two of them together, there is something of that potential in the relationships because she is engaged to this guy. He is ostensibly the father of her kid. We don't know exactly what the situation is at the point where those first scenes happen.
Right.
And so it would be very easy to paint him as a bad guy or a cad or just a milquetoast or something terrible so that you go, boy, I sure wish Lois would end up with Superman or even Clark.
Right.
No,
right.
She actually has better chemistry with the guy that she's
engaged to. She kind of has good chemistry.
And,
you're right.
Yeah. And I like the fact that, you know, he flies. That's a nice touch.
Yeah. I know, it's funny. Yeah. It's very funny.
You will believe a man can fly a plane.
A seaplane.
And a seaplane. Oh. Not just a regular plane.
But you know who is creepy and jealous in this movie? Superman.
Yes.
Who goes to creep
on
them.
Yes. Yes.
A
little bit. Yes.
Looking
yes,
through their windows, using that X-ray vision.
Yes.
That's the creepiest thing in the movie to me.
Yes. Yeah, it's I had that thought too, and I thought I'm gonna give it to him. I know I think that they mean for this to be he's checking up on her and making sure she's okay and she's happy and all of that. Mm-hmm. But and you can read it the other way, but I don't think the movie's trying to do that. There's the scene at the end where he just comes into the house and sits looking at the sleeping child, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna give it to the movie. This is his he found out this is his son. He gives him the speech that's the Marlon Brando speech. We see Marlon Brando, by the way, they got the rights back to use Marlon Brando's footage. After the falling
after
out for
time.
Superman 2, and they're like, oh, finally we could use Marlon Brando.
It would be fascinating if that somehow went to writing down costs of this movie.
Oh, and apparently some of that footage was not just what was in the first two movies. There was leftover stuff. And I actually think it was well handled. I think that whether it was the way they chose it or just his performances, somehow I liked it. It's not the kind of thing that's necessarily easy to buy. You've got this voice and this footage that's some of it's been used before and some of it hasn't. And I'm really glad they were able to make that deal.
I read an article that said that the actual, because he's only seen sort of like the shards of the crystals and all that, that it's not even, they didn't even use the video footage. It's a CGI Brando based on Brando in the Superman movie, but they use his audio, and then the audio plays back again when he's underwater. And then of course, Brandon Routh recites the lines again when talking to his son, and it's a nice little coda to the movie. But it was good to see Brando again. I wanted to mention a couple other scenes that I really liked, and we can go around and sort of like bring out your last thoughts before we wrap up. I love the scene where Perry White, who, you know, he lives large in my head from those first two movies, but isn't in it very much.
No.
Here we get Frank Langella as Perry, and he has the one scene that I really love is where he goes to all the departments and says he gives them all a Superman angle for their departments. It is so good, because that's exactly, hey, I went to journalism school, I work for newspapers. That is such a great moment of like, lifestyle, what does it all mean? Sports, how are they going to get the plane out of there? Like he's got an angle for everyone. That's why he's the chief. Don't call him chief. You can call him chief if you're his nepo nephew.
I call him Skeletor.
I like you. You can call him Skeletor if you want. I liked that there is a hilarious, to me anyway, horror / villain reveal moment where Lois takes her son illegally onto a yacht that's docked next to the mansion where there is that is the center of the blackout, because again she got to the center of the blackout story and Clark didn't, and she goes on the yacht, and then there's the moment where they're in the room and there's all the wigs and the music goes and it's this like terrifying moment, and it is simultaneously legitimately great because it is the reveal that this is Lex Luthor's yacht because of all the wigs, and also just hilarious because it's a wig reveal. That's what they're giving us, is a wig reveal, and yet I was there for it, so I thought that was brilliant.
I have scary toupees.
Wigs.
They bump into him in the hallway.
He's
walking
brushing his
out
teeth.
From brushing his teeth.
I think Lois Lane.
I love to see. That's perfect.
Good bit. So we mentioned earlier, Lois Lane's password is Superman in one of the dumbest computer scenes you will ever see in a movie. Type in Jason. Type in Superman.
Okay, you know what killed me? Now, you've worked at all kinds of professional journalism things with computers and stuff. Have you ever had to film yourself like shaking your fingers
back
and forth?
An animated login.
Yeah.
Yeah, that also
for your login. Oh, that's not my password.
The Dennis Nedry protocols. Everybody has to do that.
I just want to point out that the only reason that Lois Lane and her child don't die horribly sunken in the sea is because of a timely fax via
2006.
Boat, yes, fax machine.
I have fax machine in all caps in my notes.
I have a fax to the rescue in all caps. Fax on a boat. Amazing.
It's not. Yeah, it's not Superman who returns. It's the facsimile machine that returns.
Hashtag boat fax.
But hey, Chief. These coordinates sure do look like coordinates, don't they?
Oh,
they
so
sure do look like coordinates.
And then the Prometheus problem, which is that Calpin and the other henchmen who are not as incompetent up to this point, and the one guy plays the piano and he's got the scary tattoo, but then he tries to kill Lois and the kid kicks a piano on him and he dies, but they're like more competent until the scene where the entire Lex Island is rumbling and is going and they need to run to the helicopter, and they're like, no, I need to get my suitcase and my money and my sandwiches or whatever that we brought, my apple. I gotta bring it all with me. And then when they do that, they've got like literally a spire is coming down. It's the Prometheus problem where they're running forward and it's like, it's not that wide, guys. Run to the side. But they don't run
serpentine.
To the side.
Serpentine.
And our
serpentine.
Squish. Right. Well, don't serpentine. You just want to go break right. Just straight on right. And then it'll not crush you like a bug, but it crushes them like a bug.
In just one of these movies, I would love for one thug to look up and go, you know, based on the current trajectory, I'm just going to go over here and just break right.
Yeah,
I just want that once.
It's the one thug who survives. The only one. So any other thoughts anybody else have about things that they saw in this movie that they want to comment on?
I will just say that the design of the newsroom is quite something else. It's like, we're making a movie and we have a lot of money, so we're going to do a Frank Lloyd Wright designed newsroom. I've never been in a newsroom that looks anything like that.
No.
Especially when you have Perry White, who's doing the gruff journalist thing and is like, and he's in this like beautiful sort of arty newsroom.
It's beautiful because it's like an Art Deco version of the Johnson Wax building.
Exactly.
The interior of it. Except it's like, you can imagine that being what Wright looked at to go, hey, let's modernize it. Because it's really got those touches that he would never have done.
You've got the 24-hour news on the TVs above every desk.
Right, you have the TVs, which is absolutely total newsroom. That is 100% a thing. Then and now. I mean, I worked in newsrooms at that time where there was literally a TV over my head that I didn't want turned on because it was loud and annoying. But by God, they had it. A lot of them were not flat screens. A lot of them were big fat tubes that I was afraid was going to fall on my head.
Yeah, it just, you know, another version of open plan hell.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah.
That's right. Really nice moment. I thought a great touch where Lois says she's going to go out for air and she goes into the elevator. And then what Clark does is look through the door to see that she's going up instead of down. I was like, oh, that's a really nice bit, right? That's how he knows that she's going to the roof to meet Superman, is that he sees her go up in the elevator using the X-ray vision. Good. He also gives her that
body
scan.
She's going up to smoke. She's going up to smoke.
Yeah, she is, but she's also going up because Superman might be up there. That's the other reason she's going up there.
Okay, all right.
The tobacco lobby did not pay for product placement in this movie, unlike Superman 2, and as a result, they were able to show tobacco killing in the sense that a guy dropped a cigar and it ignited all the gas in the city. So that is a thing.
And she
that
never
happened.
Actually she is allowed to smoke.
No, she doesn't smoke. She doesn't. Smoke.
And he doesn't.
And heroes don't smoke.
For a movie that we're covering on The Incomparable, I'm just glad that the first thing we see in the model scene, one of the first things. Is a Zeppelin.
That's true.
Just a nice little flyby.
Sure. I also kind of a lot of shots of a train. I mean, I kind of delighted in the fact that his little train house it has a disaster of its own. It's in its own disaster movie.
Yes.
But, wow, there was a lot of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's funny.
I appreciate the fact that Lex Luthor's time in prison wasn't for naught, because not only did he meet a bunch of people, but he learned how to fashion a shank.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, kryptonite shank. That's a
crypto shank. Yeah.
And breaks it off in his body. Oh, yeah,
exactly.
Kryptonite shank was my nickname in high school.
I liked that bit. That was a good bit. That was a good bit. I also liked, I don't know about Hang a Lantern. This is more like calling back to something that we talked about in the first two movies, which is you can't really just drop somebody off at prison and say, all right, warden, you know what to do, and then and then leave, which he does.
Yeah.
And so in this movie, Kevin Spacey's Lex is like, yeah, you know, problem with Superman is like Miranda rights and due process and showing up for trials. I'm like, that's fair. That's fair.
Mm-hmm. And I got to say, you know, the second movie had the score adapted from themes by John Williams.
Right.
Whereas this,
I think this was the best score since the John Williams one. It's quite lovely. And it,
after
it
the credits,
the
I didn't notice the score, which I took as a positive. I mean, it was not that it, it was fine. It wasn't the as we discussed when we talked about Superman 1, that score is amazing.
Yeah, and John Ottman has done the scores for a lot of singers' films, and they're almost always lovely. Lovely music.
Yeah, so, he incorporates the Williams themes in the moments where he needs to and does
which
a good
is
job
nice.
Yeah.
The use of the Williams Superman overture theme, it's basically whenever he goes into action in this, and it's good and it's great. In future usages, though, I dig the idea of not showing the extended like everything, but instead doing quick cutaways to him doing little things. With just one little bitty blare of the theme when it cuts away to it, as two people are having an argument about whether Superman really does anything or whether he gets too much credit that he doesn't deserve, and then I dig the use of it here. I guess what I'm getting at is I would love to see it used, differently as more of a full fledged character, because it really is. It's a very powerful character in any movie in which it's used.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jason, you made slight mention of it earlier, but I wanted to touch on sort of the difference between Miss Tessmacher and Kitty in this movie. Kitty actually feels like a character.
Yep.
She's bad, but she's not like completely far gone. And I love how like I twigged pretty early that it was her in the car that was careening around, and I was like, oh yeah, probably she's distracting Superman so that they can get away with their meteorite. But then like I see how much she's panicking, and I'm like, wow, this is a wild plan. Like she's actually like she has no break. She's stomping, and nothing's happening. And then cut later to her being so upset at Lex that, and this is, another sort of nod to his character actually being threatening and bad and evil, that he cut the brakes so that she really would be in danger and maybe she would have died, and he didn't really care. And she's incredibly, incredibly upset about that. And throughout like the entire movie, she's holding this poor little dog who has eaten its sibling, which was not like that kind of showed me at the beginning of the movie, like, okay, this is what this part of the plot is going to be like. It's going to be weird. It's going to be gross. It's going to be creepy. And it's going like, these are bad people. These are very, very bad people. Except for, at the end she never really has that moment where she turns around. I mean, she drops the things, but
the
she doesn't ever really leave Lex Luthor, like she's just still there with him. Although the fact that she drops them into water, I think is a really bad idea, because if Superman hadn't been there right away, is the entire Earth suddenly going to turn into crystals? I don't know. But I just appreciated her character as an actual character more than caricature in that earlier movie.
Well, they fell onto the Lex continent before the helicopter took off.
So. Which gets and then gets thrown into space.
Yeah. Yeah. Which it'll crash into a mirror and free some Kryptonian prisoners.
Probably. It so often happens. Space is not very big.
The biggest missed opportunities, not bringing back Otis, not bringing back that diner. what else? Never mind. I'm kidding. I think they brought back basically everything they needed to.
Yeah.
I like that we got Kitty instead of, more of Miss Tessmacher.
Yep.
Giving Parker Posey the phone book to read is more entertaining than the best dialogue some writers can come up with.
Mm. Yep, I agree.
Truth.
I had not realized, and they're only 6 years apart, but like Parker Posey, the other, she was really playing this in the same way that Elizabeth Banks would have played this part. that far apart in age, but I got that vibe of like, oh, she's doing the same kind of character that Elizabeth Banks has done in a lot of movies. And it's like, I'm here for it. I enjoy it. She's a real character.
This is an example of an actor taking a part that's pretty crap and turning it into something that I think is better than as it was written.
Improved by the...
Yeah, I actually think the writing for that character is pretty decent, but I absolutely agree that Parker Posey does a lot with that character, and both in terms of how she plays independently and how she plays off against Spacey as Lex Luthor. It's fun to watch.
Well, and the interesting thing is the writers, you have to write Superman, you have to write Lois Lane, and then you find actors to play them. They actually wrote Kitty with Parker Posey in mind.
Right.
They wrote Lex Luthor with Kevin Spacey in mind.
So that might be why it plays to their strengths a little more. There's a little more chemistry. There's a little more electricity. It's a little more natural.
Jimmy Olsen doesn't have much to do other than taking that one bad picture that leads to a funny line. But I also like the moment where Jimmy made a welcome back Clark Kate and then he ate it.
Right.
He ate the part of the cake.
Welcome back, like, Clark.
I ate a piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome he ate part of the cake, but he still gives it to him, which is like, what a move that is. And, what does he say? Something like, it looks like it tastes good. And I'm waiting for Jimmy to say, yeah, it does, man. Yeah.
And also, Jimmy is the reason that that Richard knows all, I've heard so much about you. And you see Clark can't get really excited. And it's like, Jimmy won't shut up about you.
Zing. Zing. Well, so. Having taken this journey through these three movies, what I've learned is that my misty watercolor memories of the way we were in 1978 for Superman, that movie's kind of a mess, and it definitely feels like it's a studio movie mess. Superman 2 is better, but also a mess, but there's a gem of an idea that sort of isn't fulfilled. Superman Returns is, yes, a nostalgic homage to those movies, as well as a continuation of them. I think it gets a lot of things right. It has got a lot of issues. It could totally be a half an hour shorter, not by even cutting subplots, but by just tightening it up.
Just
and also
reactions.
And the end, there's that moment where Superman, they save him and he takes the thing out into space. And then they go into the, is he dead? Which of course he's not dead. I feel like the very, very end, I just wish it was totally different just because, and shorter, because it just goes on for so long. But overall, I enjoyed watching this movie again, just like I did before. And it feels more like, and this is what, going back to my thesis at the beginning, feels more like my memories, my beloved memories of the first two movies than the actual first two movies. And therefore, I'm here for it. I think it's a good movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but I think that it actually deserves to be in the conversation of modern superhero movies that are good, because I think it is good. I think it's got a lot of problems, but I think it is good. I enjoyed it. I think its heart's in the right place. And I think that there's a lot of really nice stuff in here. Even though, it's a half hour too long. It's 2.5 hours. It doesn't need to be that.
I would go out on a limb to say that people interested in looking at any of these older Superman movies, I would say, commit sacrilege. Don't do 5 hours of homework leading into this. Just watch this one, because your point, like it gets the spirit and the vibes, and that's the most important thing.
Have you heard about the old Superman movies with Christopher Reeve? That's all you need to do is have heard of them, and then watch Superman Returns.
My big problem with it plot wise, and it's not a huge thing, but Singer and the writers really hit the God, Jesus, Messiah, Savior thing a little too much, which is why we have, is he dead? Oh, and he comes back to life. Oh, and he falls
and
in a crucifix
the third
position.
Hour did the movie end three times.
And the fact is that I get it. He's Jesus. I get he's space Jesus. Like, it's very clear from the beginning. It's so clear. I mean, let's play Brando back saying again, my only son. Like, that part of it is like only there for the biblical connotation, but it never backs it up. It never backs it up.
I would just take all of those little things out. The only thing you need is, the line where Luther is, what is a god? They wear a cape and they don't share their powers. And that's a good line.
Good line.
But then get rid of all the rest of the religious stuff. I have written in my notes, the Passion of Kal-El. It's like, stop it.
Well, actually, ironically, Jim Caviezel was in consideration.
Yes,
he was.
Yeah, he was.
Boy, would that have been bad.
No, thank you.
No.
Well, and I think, and actually, I mean, despite what we said about the Brando bit, which I do like, the thing that Brando says and the thing that then Ralph says to his kid, that doesn't actually help in any way. How does that help the kid be a better Superman when he grows up? It's not useful information.
It's not for the kid. It's for him.
It's the God stuff. No, but what I'm saying is it's more about the God stuff than it is about how to be actually a better Superman. It's like, basically there's a continuum between you and your father and your son. Well, that's nice, but how does that help that kid figure out what to do with all these powers?
He's asleep.
At some point,
he'll be more practical when he wakes up. But when he's asleep,
but
he's just
hanging,
like,
you're hanging your hat on that phrase.
It's true.
That's basically sort of the motto of the thesis of the movie. And I'm like, what does that mean? Doesn't mean,
I just thought he was reminiscing about his dad.
Yeah. Right.
I guess.
Now I say it to you.
Why? What's the?
You're my son.
Right.
My dad was Marlon Brando. He rambled. Have you seen The Island of Dr. Moreau? It's
very confusing. I don't know what you're saying. You're saying stuff that I'm sure is really important, but how does that help me? I swallowed a bug.
That is my favorite line in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So,
As Superman starting points go, I would like to beat the drum momentarily for My Adventures with Superman, currently streaming on Max.
Yeah.
It's great. It's romantic. It's funny. Yeah. It is replete with all kinds of comics references. And reveals that if you know the character really well and you know various character relationships, there are things that you'll pick up on and go, wait a minute, that's so-and-so. But you don't have to get those references for it to be good and fun and light and delightful. And I'm glad that it exists in advance of whatever they're doing to Superman Legacy.
Yeah.
I remember walking home from seeing this movie in 06, feeling really introspective. And really thinking about how the movie made me think about more than just action. And I think there were portions of it in rewatching it that I still got from that, but I still really like this film. In terms of all the Superman films, it may actually be my favorite Superman film. Complete, you know, from beginning to end. But the thing that I'm stuck with is the fact that the movie that I wanted to see was Superman dealing with the fact that he's got this kid.
Yeah.
With this woman that he loves, who loved him before he kissed her with his magical powers. and you know, like how he deals with that and how he deals with the fact that part of his hero's journey and his hero's burden is that he has to let that go in order to be Superman for the rest of the world.
It's actually what we said about the portrayal of Lois Lane. It goes for that too, which is it's in there, but not dealt with. And you're right. Imagine a movie that really dealt with the fact of like, what happened? First off, you left the Earth for 5 years and all sorts of bad things happened. And people are probably going to be mad at you for that. That doesn't happen here, but people are probably mad at you for abandoning them for 5 years. Why have you forsaken me? Oh no, more references. And secondly, the personal toll, right? Is this kid mine or not? But like, Lois, surely Lois knows, right? And there is this, like, you left me pregnant and I had a kid and you just were gone. And what this movie does is they have that conversation on the roof where she's like, couldn't you have said goodbye first? Like, that's number one on your list.
Can we talk about the one thing that you just mentioned right there? Because at the end of Superman 2, she has amnesia.
Uh-huh. She doesn't remember any of that, allegedly.
Right?
Right. So we're... Oh no, it's an immaculate conception.
Right. She's got this baby that she knows is Superman's. Because she tells him on his deathbed... Well, she tells him something.
Does she? We don't know.
Right.
She tells him something.
Right.
The kiss didn't erase everything, yeah. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
And didn't erase her love for Superman?
By the end of this movie, she knows that, you know, the kid pushed the piano and saved her life. So it's not Richard's kid.
Sure, but does she remember having sex with Superman?
Maybe not.
I never thought that the kiss erased all of that. I thought it just erased the knowledge that Clark Kent is Superman.
It has to be. That's how they took it.
It's a very selective kiss.
Well, because she learned that. I mean, as I recall at this point, who knows, maybe I got amnesia kiss too. Like that, them sleeping together happened in very close proximity to her discovering that Clark is Superman. So that was the most confusing thing to me was I thought that actually the most confusing thing about the movie is that it relies on how well you remember something, even if you saw it the week before you saw this.
This is why it's like, is it a sequel or is it not? It's like, it's a sequel to what we want to remember and take from the last movie. So what we want to remember is that they did consummate their relationship. And what we want to remember is they did erase her memory so that she doesn't know that Clark is Superman. What we don't want to remember is that the first one came after the second one, and it doesn't really make sense that you could erase one or not the other. But this movie isn't concerned with that, right? Because it's like, look, no, we're making a sequel to movies the way we want to think of them, not the way they were.
It's a selective sequel. Yes.
It is a selective sequel. Well done, Erica.
So she remembers having had sex with Superman, who she that incredibly powerful kiss.
Who is somebody?
Made her forget.
Right. Who is somebody?
Was what it looked startlingly like Clark Kent. Right. She just has. I just find it troubling that
it's weird.
It makes that plot point a very hazy, like someone was drugged kind of experience. That bothers me.
And that might be why the, and we talked about this in the Superman 2 episode, the denying of agency of Lois Lane. I got to erase your memory now. Yep. Right. It's so frustrating. Yeah. I wonder if that's one of the reasons the screenplay here just sort of soft pedals the whole thing, is because like, once you start pulling at the thread of like, what does she remember? It's like, oh boy, like there is that's a whole mess,
this,
right? So they're just like,
the whole movie it is so much better the less you think very hard about it.
It's just, it's a nostalgia trip and a fun ride, and do not, because again, yes, if you start picking it apart, you'll be like, but wait a second, in Superman 2, it's like, no, we agreed you wouldn't go back and watch Superman 2. You just remember it, right? It's a memory sequel. Memory sequel.
You pull too hard on one string, the whole thing comes apart.
Yeah. All right. This has been fun. It's been fun to revisit these movies. I think Superman Returns is a good movie. Yes, I think that it holds up in ways that the first two don't, and fits in with some of the other good superhero movies of the 2000s. Been a pleasure talking about it. Brandon Routh, he's good. He should be in more stuff. He was
Agreed.
A good Superman. He was. He was a good on an Arrow, too. So yeah, and Chuck. Like,
and
he's good
Chuck.
In stuff.
And
check
Chuck.
Him out.
I
and,
hated him.
And he was a bright spot in Legends of Tomorrow,
yes.
even when it
yes.
was not.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. No, good guy, a good part, good casting here. Thank you to my panelist, Cicero Holmes. Thank you, as always.
Thank you, Jason. Well, I hope this experience hasn't put any of you off flying, because statistically speaking, it's still the safest way to travel.
Absolutely. David J. Lohr, thank you.
Goodbye, Lois. Now, hang on. I've got about 5 more minutes of me flying.
Okay.
So just, you know, yeah.
Shelley Brisbane, thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go out and get a cape.
Good.
Make no
it, capes. Make it an edible cape in case you're on a spaceship for 5 years. Moises Chuyan, thank you.
Sing us a song. You're the piano thug.
Oh, that guy. So good. Erica Ensign, thank you.
I like my emo Superman. You will believe a man can cry.
And I'd like to do a shout out to the true hero of this movie. The fax machine knows what I'm talking about. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Incomparable. We will see you next time.